friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Prince Nestor sitting in for Zanyang in Washington. Welcome to the September 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in the world of cycling. Rwanda will be the first African nation to host the UCI World Road Cycling Championships. The recent International Cycling Union Congress in Louvain, Belgium, declared that the 2025 race will be in Kigali. Asian Uimana has the details from Kigali. Sporty greetings, Asian.
Sporty greetings, Prince. It will be the first time since its inception in its 100-year history the World Road Cycling Championships will be in an African country. Rwanda, known as the country of a thousand hills, submitted its application to host this global competition in September 2019 and emerged a winner after beating Morocco. David Lapartier is the president of International Cycling Union, or UCI. He assured athletes and cycling fans that Rwanda's climate and geography will make for an enjoyable competition.
I can tell you the circuit in Kigali will not be an easy one. It will not be specifically for a sprinter. And I know how strong is the passion of the people from Africa and more specifically from Rwanda for cycling. I've been the witness of this. I'm sure it will be something completely unique, completely amazing.
He made the comments last week at the UCI Congress in Belgium, and the Rwanda Cycling Federation made the audio available to journalists. The championship races have been held in Europe, North and South America, Australia and Asia. This year's race just wrapped up on Sunday in Belgium. The 2022 race will take place in Australia, followed by Scotland in 2023 and in 2024 Switzerland. Rwandan Sports Minister Aurore Mimosa Mnyangaju thanked the Congress for choosing Rwanda and promised a smooth competition. Mnyangaju says that it's a great honor for Africa to host it, and the government and the Cycling Federation of Rwanda will work hard so that the UCI in general is made proud. She was speaking at last week's UCI Congress in Belgium, and the Rwanda Cycling Federation made the audio available. The first championship race was in Denmark in 1921. David Lapartier, the president of the UCI, says he's not only happy that Africa is going to host the championship, he has hope that African teams will do well and help expand the sport.
The goal for us is just not to have the championship in Africa. It's just also to ensure that all the African nations, they will have the opportunity to take part in the championship. So we have a long roadmap of 4 years to be able to continue to enlarge cycling. It must be the championship in Africa, but it must be also the championship for Africa.
The UCI Road World Championship attracts about 5,000 cyclists and over 20,000 delegates. According to the UCI, more than 200 million people worldwide watch the races via over 50 international media agencies. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Eugene Uimana in Kigali, Rwanda.
Thanks, Agent. I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Some Nigerian basketball analysts have been speaking on the victory of the country's national women's basketball team at the FIBA Women's AfroBasket Championship in Cameroon. The Nigerian national women basketball team, also known as the Tigress, defeated Mali 70-59 to retain the women's AfroBasket title. Nigerian captain Adaora Elone was voted the most valuable player of the championship. Martina Emmanuel is the head coach of basketball in Benue State and a former member of Nigeria's national women's basketball team. She spoke to reporter Mike Mbonyi about the victory of the Nigerian team at the FIBA Women's AfroBasket Championship.
I'm overwhelmed. Up to now, you know, my body is still shaking for that victory. I'm so happy, I'm so excited, and I would want to, first of all, congratulate the girls for their gallant outing to retain the title of Afro Basketball Women Champion 2021. You girls are too much. Words will fail me to describe how you guys went out there in that battle to retain the title, to bring us to a recognition in the whole world. especially in Africa. I want to say thank you, Tigress. You guys are too much. You guys are beautiful. You know, may the Lord bless and keep you all. Thank you for honoring Nigeria. Thank you, beautiful girls.
What's your assessment of the game of Nigeria's women national team at the FIBA Women's Afrobasket Championship?
Yeah, the team assessment in this tournament was my final assessment is the trophy that you see us received, the two All-Stars players, the MVP, all came from a Nigerian team. What the team did was to take lead in the first half, and that counts a lot for anything, because statistics have it that when a team leads with 12 or 15 points before first half, that team is likely to pick the tournament. And if the team dares to lose, it is with a single point, which is not going to be possible with Nigerian team, who went into that game so determined to retain title, so determined, you know, to face the Malians. The Malians are physical team, very physical team, and you need smart girls to outshine them, especially in the buckets. Our big girls made use of the bucket. They made use of the floor. They limited the Malians from gaining control of a second chance point. But that is, they were all rebounding. They were taking our rebounds, offense and defensive. And turnovers was limited. I tell you the truth. Because the Malians specializes in converting turnovers to points. And statistics have it that I think they have either 12.5 or 15.5 or so percent in converting turnovers. And so we limited our turnovers. We were careful in order not to play to their tune. And our girls' mobility outshined them. The ability to change direction. We didn't just pass the ball because we want to pass the ball. We passed the ball because we know that the person crossing, the person taking a new position, is positioned enough for a possible shot and for a sure shot. And so that was exactly what the girls did. And another assessment is of the void of the bench point. To me, it was good. Players coming off the bench, coming to from substitution, coming to make impact and go back and take a rest. That was very, very encouraging. The free throws was encouraging. Though the 3 points didn't come like that of a Senegal match, but then it was comfortable to push us in because they started well with the 3 points. Adora also was taking the 3 points. I was expecting Okonkwo to also shine in the 3 points position this time. But defense, you know, because the Malians also want to win, so they came physical in their defense. And so that also, if you're a player that is not physical, you will not be able to break a physical defense. So that also had a little bit of impact. But then, because the girls took over the first and second quarter in a good lead, we were comfortable in the third and fourth quarter. Fourth quarter, well, because they were assured that they're going to win, so they relaxed a little bit and 1-2 turnovers made the Malians to convert their point. But then time was up, and so we got the victory.
Do you think basketball should get more sponsorship in Nigeria, given the achievements of the women national team?
Basketball should be recognized now in Nigeria, because we have proven ourselves. The world and Africa knows that the female basketball for Nigeria dominates the continent. And so our own country should recognize us, because we have done it for 3 times stretch. Basketball have of recent brought honor and recognition to Nigeria. And for that, the game should be recognized by the government, like football. Oh no, every recognition is football. But we have gone out there to defend our country, to promote our country, to cause Nigeria as a country to be recognized in Africa through basketball. That singular reason of that honor we brought to the country, basketball should be recognized in Nigeria, just exactly like football. And nothing less than that. Because if you want us to remain in the hands of the affairs of sports, especially in basketball, then let the country recognize basketball as number one or number two sports in Nigeria. Thank you.
That was Martina Emmanuel, former member of Nigeria's national women's basketball team. She spoke with reporter Mike Mbonya on the telephone from Makurdi, Nigeria. Ivorian forward Wilfred Zaha scored on his 400th Crystal Palace appearance before Neil Mopai spoiled the party with a last-minute goal to earn Brighton a point in the Premier League clash on Monday at Selhurst Park. Brighton supporters rushed onto the pitch to celebrate the equaliser. There were ugly scenes in the stands immediately after the final whistle, as Crystal Palace fans provoked Brighton players as they made their way down the tunnel. Brighton lies sixth in the standings, while Patrick Vieira's Crystal Palace sits at 15th. This is Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola says he does not have a formula to stop the trio of Lionel Messi, French star of Cameroonian descent Kylian Mbappe and Brazilian superstar Neymar as his team prepares to face Paris Saint-Germain in France on Tuesday. The citizens hope the return of Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden from injuries will help them extend their unbeaten run against the Parisians when they meet in the much-anticipated Champions League group stage clash. But Pep Guardiola sounded an alarm.
I don't know. With this amount of quality, I don't know what we should do to stop them, honestly. I don't know. They are so good. So the talent and this amount of talent all together to be controlled is so difficult. So we're going to try to, you know, to defend well when we don't have the ball and try to, you know, to let them run when we have the ball. This is what we have to do. I don't know. They are exceptional players. So everybody knows it. All of them are so good individually and they can combine and connect each other. So, yeah, looking forward to the game and play the game.
Guardiola's feelings were also captured by Manchester City midfielder Riyad Mahrez, who also thinks the presence of Lionel Messi has strengthened the PSG squad.
No, obviously, PSG is a very, very good team. Obviously, they're more or less the same team of last season. More or less, you have to add Messi and few of the players. I think it's Hakimi and Wijnaldum. So I think they have they're stronger this season. They have a bigger squad, and but I think it's gonna be a more or less the same game as last season. Very tight, and the best on the day will win.
That's Algerian talisman in Manchester City midfielder Riyad Mahrez expressing his thoughts ahead of the team's highly anticipated Champions League clash against Paris Saint-Germain. Villarreal travels to England on Wednesday to face a wounded Manchester United side that they beat in last year's Europa League final. The Red Devils go into the match after back-to-back defeats to West Ham United in the League Cup in a shock 1-0 loss to Aston Villa at Old Trafford during the weekend. The Yellow Submarine, on their part, held Real Madrid to a goalless draw on Saturday in La Liga. Liverpool will be in high spirits taking a full squad to Porto, but the fans will be a bit wary of their leaky defense, which was displayed in their 3-3 draw against Brentford during the weekend. I spoke with Kenyan sports journalist John Kianda on how he sees the chances of Liverpool and other teams in the Champions League matches slated for Tuesday and Wednesday.
Your thoughts on the Liverpool against Porto match?
Liverpool is a settled squad. Very settled. Despite their previous draw, they are a very settled and match-related squad. There's no way Porto is going to beat Liverpool. Yes, they do against Atletico Madrid, but I mean, Liverpool's form so far, despite their draw over the weekend, they are a very talented side. And most of their star players, what Liverpool management has done is basically rewarding their top talent with new contracts and much improved contracts from the previous ones. So to me, that is a motivation. And settling the senior players, Van Dijk, look at Fabinho, is a key player, utility player. Mo Salah is going to sign a new contract very soon. I mean, Sadio Mane, they are very settled. So to me, there's no way, despite Porto being one of the best academies in the world of football, there's no way Porto is going to beat Liverpool because they are much settled. The biggest clash in this pool is Atletico Madrid against Liverpool. So you have to collect maximum points from these games. So they beat AC Milan. We saw how they came back from behind to beat AC Milan. And there are no they need to get 6 points from Porto, 6 points from AC Milan, then clash out with Atletico Madrid. So to me, the top two sides that are going to qualify in this group is definitely Atletico Madrid and Liverpool. And from the talent that we've seen at Liverpool, I don't think Porto is going to mark them this evening.
It may be a bit too early to count out AC Milan, who are going to be taking on Atletico Madrid. Your thoughts?
They will be beaten by Atletico Madrid. I mean, Griezmann, Suarez, Joao Felix, top talent, scoring form. I don't think if they're going to match the striking force of Luis Suarez, Joao Felix, and Antonio Griezmann. This is top players in the world. I mean, I don't just see AC Milan beating Atletico Madrid this evening.
That was Kenyan journalist John Kiander talking about some of the Champions League matches scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Kenyan veteran skipper and CF Montreal midfielder Victor Wanyama has announced his retirement from international football. The 30-year-old made his senior debut in 2007, age 15, and netted 7 goals in 64 games for Harambee Stars. The former Southampton, Celtic and Tottenham Hotspur player wrote on his social media page, and I quote, "From making my debut against Nigeria to captaining the team at the African Cup of Nations finals in Egypt, these past 14 years have gone beyond what I ever thought possible. We have shared great moments together, and I'm proud to have been your captain and leader. But all good things must come to an end eventually, and after long consideration, I've made the really difficult decision to retire from international football. The time has come to hand over the team to the next generation so they too can make their mark and help our country reach even greater heights." End of quote. I spoke to former Kenyan international Titus Mulama about Wanyama's decision to retire and its implication for the national team.
Kenyan veteran skipper and CF Montreal midfielder Victor Wanyama has actually announced his retirement from international football. Titus, your thoughts?
For me, it's a sad day for Kenyan football, seeing the captain exit the stage. When in my opinion, I thought he was really, really doing good at Montreal. So at this moment, I think it's a loss for the Kenyan team.
It's a very interesting decision, actually, because he's only 30 years old. We would have expected him, you know, to play a little bit longer, considering there are other footballers such as Roger Miller, who actually played up to 40 years plus. I mean, don't you think maybe 30 years, it's a very young age to retire from international football?
Yeah, it's for Victor and for players at that age playing at Victor's level, it's still early, I think, because I think it's when they're really getting to mature into the game. And even if he had to, there's a process of retirement of making him retire, then we should have looked at a proper way to make the transition, because there was no understudy for Victor in the national team. So definitely it's a big hole in the team. And bearing in mind, we have very crucial matches in a matter of 2 months, four must-win matches. So really, really, I know the team will be affected. That it's a sad day for Kenyans. As I said, I haven't talked to Victor and gotten his thoughts on this, but it's a shock for everyone.
Why are you surprised, and what do you think might have been going through his mind, come up with such a decision?
Yeah, well, it is just the way things have been run in the nation, and the way football is being run, and the decision to leave him out of the squad the last two very crucial matches. Well, maybe he thought that they were sending him signals. And for a player, I know it is frustrating when you love to play for your nation. You know you have something to give, but then you're being overlooked with no apparently any good reason. Victor is in good form. He's in good shape. He's playing regularly. He's making assists. He's doing good with his clubs. So I think all this came to play. And knowing his stand on corruption and players' rights, he has been outspoken. He's spoken on these issues. So I know Kenyan way, you have to be ready to be excluded. So I think all of this played in his mind before he came up with the decision. But I think he really, really, bottom line is like he felt frustrated and unappreciated for the efforts. That is the main reason I should believe. Knowing Victor, he doesn't give up easily, but it really has to do with that.
You've been a soccer player for a long time. And right now, just looking at the current crop of players in the Harambee Stars team, who do you think can be a possible replacement as far as Victor is concerned?
Well, Victor is irreplaceable for the moment. As I told you, but that we didn't have an understudy that we could see, well, this guy is coming in the last few minutes, coming in and playing alongside Victor, like we did with him, you know. As he was coming in, we were with him, and he was our understudy, and he came out real good. So there was really no one to understudying Victor, or playing at least being trained to play that position anytime soon, because we didn't expect this. So for me, maybe we change the way we play, but Victor is not replaceable by anyone anytime soon.
Interesting analysis. I would like you personally to send a tribute to Victor, a message to him.
You know, they say photos speak 1,000 words. So I have a lot of photos in my, with memories of Victor, but I can say that Victor, we miss your services. I hope that you can rescind your decision to play for the nation, because the nation really needs you. But if you feel that's the right thing for you and your family to do at the moment, because your life takes precedence, we respect that. But we respect you as a person and as a player, and for the services you've done for the nation, being captain for the Cup of Nations with the team under really difficult circumstances. It's a great honor to have known you and played along you. Well, all the best in your career at Montreal, and whatever you choose to become in life, we are behind you. We love you, and God bless you.
Fantastic message. And, you know, how do you fancy Harambee Stars' chances of possibly qualifying for the World Cup without his services?
Yeah, you know, you cannot write a team off. In sports, anything can happen. But on paper, we stand no chance. We could have easily won the last two matches and gone to Mali with confidence and gotten a result there and come home and beat them. But we made mistakes without Victor, and I cannot see ourselves winning or playing comfortably without Victor. So our chances, no, zero for the moment. To proceed to the next level, for me, it's not possible.
And, you know, you played in various countries. You played in Kenya for Mathare United. You played in the Democratic Republic of Congo. You also played in Costa Rica and Sweden. And, you know, just looking at the experiences that you have, and, you know, possibly as a coach, let's just say you put yourself in Harambee Stars' shoes right now, what does the team need to do for them to qualify for the World Cup?
We need to start afresh. We need to start playing Rwanda and Uganda again, then beat them. But for the moment, what you need to do is be more courageous, be more adventurous in front of the opponent's goals. Have many attacking ideas with us, because it's like we only are using one way to lump the ball. But try to do that and build more confidence and self-belief, and let the players express themselves. You never know what might happen, because we have nothing to lose as it stands right now. So we have to put in everything, go take full risk at every game, go for all or nothing.
That was former Kenyan soccer legend Dr. Intus Mulama speaking with me about Victor Wanyama's decision to retire from the Kenya national team, the Harambee Stars. The midfielder, last featured for the Kenya national team in November 2020, captained the Harambee Stars at the 2019 African Cup of Nations and had been overlooked for selection during the 2022 World Cup qualifying matches earlier this month. I'm Prince Nesta, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In the U.S., some National Basketball Association players have expressed reservations about taking the COVID vaccine. Speaking to reporters on Monday, Washington Wizards guard Bradley Beal revealed that he was yet to receive a COVID-19 vaccine, citing quote-unquote personal reasons.
Oh, I am not vaccinated. No, not.
Do you care to share why?
Personal reason. They do it. I definitely think about it for sure. I mean, with the guidelines that the league makes and everything that the protocols are doing, they kind of make it difficult on us to where they kind of force us in a way to want to get it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I talk it over with my family and we make a decision that we think is best for us, just like the rest of the world. I would like an explanation to, you know, people with vaccines. Why are they still getting COVID? If that's something that we are supposed to highly be protected from, like, that's funny that, oh, it reduces your chances of going to the hospital. It doesn't eliminate anybody from getting COVID, right?
Golden State Warriors swingman Andrew Wiggins also confirmed that he was yet to receive the COVID vaccine and had applied for quote-unquote religious exemptions.
Back is definitely, you know, against the wall, but just gonna keep fighting for what I believe, and whether it's one thing or another, get a vaccination or not get a vaccination, who knows? I'm just gonna, you know, keep fighting for what I believe, and what I believe is right. You know, what's right to one person isn't right to the other, you know, vice versa.
I mean, you stand to lose a lot of money. And
it's my problem, not yours.
Okay.
Wiggins' decision has prompted his fellow teammate and three-time NBA champion Steph Curry to react.
It's difficult. I mean, you can ask everybody on the team. We'll have 18 different ways of explaining, you know, personal decision, the sense of urgency of the decision, you know, understanding what the potential consequences and fallout, you know, is. At the end of the day, it is up to him. I think it's no secret to that point. We obviously hope that he has, you know, all the right information, the access to the right resources to ask all the questions he has on, you know, making that decision. You know, we hope he's available. We hope it moves in the right direction. My opinion is, obviously, I got it and ready to be available and following, you know, the mandates and whatnot.
Other players also revealed that they made the decision to become vaccinated after intense deliberations, including Utah center Rudy Gobert, the first NBA player to test positive of the novel coronavirus.
You know, I took my time. I didn't want to, you know, be pressured by it and talk to a lot of people, waited a little bit, and when I felt like it was time, I did.
NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has said he thinks the NBA should have strict COVID-19 measures, including a vaccine mandate for all players. The comments follow a recent report by Rolling Stone magazine that Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving was among influential players refusing to get vaccinated against COVID-19. In a statement to Rolling Stone, the NBA's all-time leading scorer condemned the rise of misinformation related to COVID among NBA players, saying, and I quote, "There is no room for players who are willing to risk the health and lives of their teammates, the staff, and the fans simply because they are unable to grasp the seriousness of the situation or do the necessary research." What I find especially disingenuous about the vaccine deniers is their arrogance at disbelieving immunology and other medical experts. Yet, if their child was sick or they themselves needed emergency medical treatment, how quickly would they do exactly what those same experts told them to do? The NBA great also spoke of the importance of encouraging vaccine-hesitant individuals from underrepresented groups to get vaccinated. And that wraps up the September 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Mukbilia Barrow. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Prince Nesta sitting in for Sunny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.